Hi, everyone, and welcome to El Camino People, the podcast with us again. We are back to our live videos, and today we have a longtime friend. I'm like, how are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be back. Great to see you alive and kicking through with El Camino through the entire, you know, when was it last time we spoke? Like a year ago?
Probably. I'm like, it is incredible. Our first interview was what, 2 years ago? Probably something like that when we first get in. No, not the interview. When we first get in touch, probably was 2 or 3 years ago.
I think 2 years ago, I went through Instagram when I was on the Via de la Plata.
And that's when we, yeah. And you got also, yeah. You also got me into a lot of trouble, you and your friend on the Via de la Plata. But we will talk about that later.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
So finally, you're here in Spain. You're right now walking the Camino. You walk the Portuguese Camino also. You are being all over. But today we are going to be talking about the Via de la Plata, one of the Caminos that I think is super intriguing for a lot of people right now. But before we go into that, you know, it's one of the things that I hate, but please like and subscribe to videos. I know I hate to do it this, but let's make it so we can get to more people, you know, inspire more people to walk the Camino. And I think this information is really useful. So I think that, you know, the more we spread the love for the Camino, the more we spread the knowledge, there is less crazy things that is going to happen. Because still, you know, here in Navarra, there's still people that get lost going over the Pyrenees. There's people, things that happen in the Via de la Plata. And I think, you know, it's, with all the information that we have right now, I still don't get how people make those mistakes.
I know. It's I think it's probably lack of knowledge. You know, people might have a romantic idea of what it's of doing a Camino. You know, there's been so many books written about it, movies, friends of friends who have done it, but they don't realize what it's like to go out walking for 4 to 6 weeks, or if you do a shorter one.
And here we have some friends joining them from Montreal, from Canada.
Oh, look at that.
So anyway, the other day we were talking today, you are the second guest over here. We talk about the Camino Francés, the Camino del Norte. We also talk about smaller Caminos, the Camino Aragonés. And one of the things we agree is if you have to choose one first Camino, it's the Camino Francés. It's the one that has it all. I don't know in your case if your Camino Francés was also your first one or you did another Camino prior to doing all these Caminos that you walk now.
No, it was the Francés. I didn't even know what it was literally until the day I started. I thought we would end up, you know, at a hotel with stages. But, when we ended up crossing the Pyrenees and stayed in Roncesvalles, there's the monastery and there were dorm rooms. And, you know, I had no idea what I was actually embarking on. But the Camino grew on me. And when I, you know, finally reached the end, I realized there was more Caminos. And since then, I got hooked.
When was the time that you decided to do the Via de la Plata and why you went into the Via de la Plata?
That's a very good question. First of all, I had broken up with my ex-girlfriend and I wanted to do what I call a year of Eat, Pray, Love. I'm glad you know, because it's really a chick flick. But I left and I started doing actually the Camino de Chemin, Le Puy-en-Velay, which is the GR131, I believe. Which starts in France, and then left for Bali. And I wanted to come back and do what I think is probably the toughest Camino, the Via de la Plata. Probably because it's, I think, just over 1,000 kilometers, and it's fairly flat. So it's long, and there's only a couple of months you can actually go and walk it. The distances are large. There's not many pilgrims like on all the other Caminos you can walk. And so I was trying to find, I guess a bit of peace and solace and, you know, some a little bit more. I wanted to focus more on the hiking. Yeah. And which you can definitely get on the Via de la Plata.
Before we go into the Via de la Plata, I think we have a friend also that is living right now close to the Via de la Plata. So, yeah. Hi, Dennis. I hope we can do another meeting. We should invite him one day also here. I don't know if that will be too much trouble, but yeah, let's go into business and let's talk the Via de la Plata. I think, you know, for me, it's one of those Caminos that has been calling me for a long time. And also it's because what you say, you know, there's not many pilgrims there. It is just really should be walk only a couple months in the year because during the winter it's really cold and during the summer it's really too hot. I'm like, you can do it, but it probably not the safest. And now that we are talking about walking the Camino safely and also making the most out of it, no?
Yeah.
But I think it's one of those that all the people that I've seen is older crowd, people that have walked many Caminos before. You know, maybe on your second one, you go to the Camino Portuguese, maybe you go to the Aragonés, or maybe you go to the Primitivo, but it takes a step farther to go into the Via de la Plata, no?
I think so, yeah. I mean, when I walked it, I did find, you know, I think I only met no more than 12 pilgrims. I mean, mind you, when I walked, it was in 2020, so when the pandemic hit. And so a lot of albergues, restaurants, and bars were closed, which made it a little bit more challenging. But like this picture, you know, the Via de la Plata, I think what people, some people might not know, it starts from Andalusia in Sevilla and goes literally straight up until it hits Galicia, and then it becomes the Camino. I forgot. It's not the Mozarabe. It's the not the Invierno. You know. You know how it's, help me out here, man.
We will leave it for the next one. We'll talk about different Caminos. Okay. One of the things, you know, and as you say, it is a problem. Once you start walking the Caminos, there is more Caminos and more Caminos and more Caminos. Right now, I'm planning my Camino, my big Camino for this year. And I'm, you know, researching in Italy. I think this year is a great year. Maybe not to walk so much in Spain, because I think it's going to be super crowded. It's going to be great. Because a lot of people are super excited to go back to the Camino. So the Pope is going to Santiago. There's going to be so many events that, you know, it's going to be great. But you start researching and there's more Caminos coming up. There's the Ignaciano, there's the Via de la Plata, Mozarabe, Sanabres, Portuguese. And like, and you this summer, you walk the Camino dos Faros. That is amazing. And you walk some Caminos also in Portugal that are incredible. But we'll have to go for those another day. But let's dig into the Via de la Plata. I'm trying to compress what is the essence of a Camino, you know, and when I was thinking, and I haven't walked the Via de la Plata, so for me, it was quite hard. I know a lot of people, I read some books, but, you know, one of the things I think is when you're looking for short little long walks, very few pilgrims, and the longest Camino in Spain, this is it. But try to avoid the summer. I think that, you know, in a nutshell, that's kind of like the Via de la Plata. I don't know what you think.
I absolutely agree. I mean, you could probably start walking. You have to prep it well, either from spring or fall time. I think if you go in spring, so the photo you're showing here is springtime, because if you walk in the fall, everything on the side of the dirt track is basically brown because it's been, you know, torched by summer. Yeah. But this picture really resembles what the Via de la Plata is like, because it's endless days of just a long path going through little villages. It's got to be, you know, up your alley if you want to do something like this, but it gives you a lot of time to think, to just physically walk, to listen to podcasts, you know, to do whatever you feel like doing. It's a lot of walking and long stages as well.
We have a friend here, I think, that you know very well.
Here we go. Yes.
Hello, so I think it's going to be four of us in the podcast, because Dennis is saying that he's planning to do the Via de la Plata in summer, but I know he can do it. It can be done. It's just a matter of, you know, being careful of when you start walking in the morning and being sure that it can go up to 30 high degrees without water during the whole Camino. No shade, no nothing, not even a bar.
Yeah, I would say I wouldn't even be surprised if it went over 40. You know, if you do this, if Dennis wants to do this in the summer, you start, you know, at unholy times, of say 4 a.m, you know, to really get done by 2 and have a siesta and then call it a day, because walking anytime afternoon.
Like, if you are used to, and if you are in good shape and you've been hiking, you know, this is not for a once-time hiker, but for us that we've been hiking on over. If you know yourself, it's something that can be done in a totally different Camino, like walking. You're going to be walking during the night. That is something that I encourage everyone to do it. And walking without light. I'm like, I hate those people that go at 4 a.m. and they're going with a flashlight, and drives me a little nuts, because if you wait a little bit, your eyes will get used to the darkness and you can see in this Camino. So I'm like, maybe no, if you're in a village or something, but in places like this is incredible. So try it at least once in a lifetime, and if you do the Camino, as you said, you know, maybe arriving to the albergue at 1 in the afternoon, taking a nap, and then visiting the village in the afternoon. But it's going to be super hot, and there's going to be nothing really to go around. So let's see if Dan has been so nice. He sent me some pictures from the Camino de Plata. So the whole idea is we're going to review those pictures with him, and then we'll go the little compress of what is the Camino. So Via de la Plata, as you were saying, you start in Seville, but you can start farther down if you want. You can make it a little longer. It's not the Via de la Plata, it's a different Camino, but the official one starts in Seville. So we see the someone that walked with you, the Via de la Plata.
Yes, this is my good friend Jay. Joey knows him as well. He's a Kiwi. This was he's a first-time pilgrim, and he did the Via de la Plata as his first Camino. So he's in the minority of this. This is when we arrived, what was it, back in October 2020.
And what's going on with the cat? I'm like, you can be brothers. I'm like, you have the same kind of hair in that picture.
Well, I'm going to take that as a compliment. So thank you, Jose. This is, I think, a day or two. This is in Galicia, a day or two before Santiago. And Jay and I were walking through a forest, and we literally in the middle of nowhere. And all of a sudden, this cat pops up, not this one. And it starts following us. It obviously had been abandoned or it had gotten lost. And eventually, without the cat, we came to this albergue, and the owner had four of these cats. And we found out that he had found them near one of the aldeas, one of the villages where the other cat was lost. So we hope that he went back, found the other kitten, and reunited it with the other ones. But aww, as you can see, they're very friendly.
So one of the things, you know, when a lot of people think about the Via de la Plata, they think just flat. But I know that sometimes there's some hills, there's some lakes, there's some different things. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so as you go north through from Seville through Andalusia, it does become a bit of a climb. I mean, it's nothing like, you know, the Pyrenees or on the Camino del Norte. But with the heat, it can still be a bit challenging because you're moving up. But it's dry, as you can see. Even here, you could tell that the water reservoir, because I think this photo was taken from a dam. You can see how the water level has dropped probably over 20 meters, which is intense, and which shows the drought, you know, the problems that Spain has with that.
And one of the things that we were talking also, you were saying that it's a Camino that you see few people. And also, I'm like, I'm not just, you know, trying to be disrespectful to anyone, but older crowd. I'm like, here you are the youngest of the group. Tell us where was this picture or what was going on?
This picture was taken in Salamanca, and we had all met. So to the right of me is Joy. To the right, I forget the other two. And then there's... God, I'm terrible with names, but the guy in the purple jacket, he's basically the man. You should actually be interviewing him for the Via de la Plata. He wrote the guidebook, and he runs the Facebook group. But yeah, so, you know, when you do meet up, everybody likes to hang out with other people, or at least most people like to hang out with other people, especially after hiking a long day. So, you know, vino tinto always goes well amongst friends.
We have a question here that are asking us, so what happened after this then? I don't know if that's a story that can be told or not.
It absolutely can be told. I don't know if you probably had seen those stories at the time with the master.
I was following you quite closely. And you know, one of the things I see in your pictures is a lot of jamon, a lot of wine. Oh, Joey's telling us that their names were Brian and Patrick.
Brian, Patrick. But then, Joey, what was... I can't believe I forget. She's going to probably come up.
So one of the things also, you know, the other day we were discussing as we walk the Camino, a lot of people, they are like, and we've been seeing a lot of, you know, interviews or blog posts about how the Camino should be super cheap. You just need to do the, you know, the Menú del Peregrino. But I know that you also love your good food, and you love, you know, when you travel, you like to, you know, discover the place. And I think really that traveling without discovering the food of the place and going every once in a while to a little better place. So what can you tell us about the Via de la Plata and the food compared to the Camino Francés or to the other Caminos?
So that's a very good question, actually. I found that when you're on the Camino Francés, I mean, you have the opportunity, but you have to eat a lot of local food. But most of the pilgrims end up going to restaurants that kind of do the pilgrim deal, which is the cheap, you know, I think 10, 12 euro, three-course meal. Sometimes you get lucky and you have a chef who makes amazing food, but most of the time it's fairly simple. But on the Via de la Plata, they don't have any of this commercialized type of, you know, Menú del Día for pilgrims. Mm-hmm. So you go out and as you can see, the ham. And this, I think, was taken in Extremadura, which is known for its...
great place for ham.
Great place for ham. Yeah. And I forget what the cheese is to the right. You can see there's a, it's a, I mean.
Yeah, the one of those that's open, probably one of those soft cheese, no?
Yeah, you slice it in half and you can just basically spoon out cheese.
And also one of the big questions, you know, and it's becoming more often in every Camino, but I know the Vía de la Plata, the albergues. Is there many albergues? Is there any other kind of accommodations? Is easy to find a place? And I know you went into during the COVID times, and yeah, your case was even harder because you have to split your Camino. You went back home, you went back again to the Camino.
Yeah.
So how was the albergue situation in the Vía de la Plata?
I would probably guess, you know, in a normal year, so without any COVID restrictions, it would be okay because of its popularity, or if not being that popular, there aren't many albergues, but there's always, you know, Airbnbs or other you know, pensions or places you could always, in worst case, you just go into a bar and ask, and then they always will know someone who has a room to rent or something. So there's enough place, but you know, you need to, I would say, you know, probably the most important thing on the Vía de la Plata is to be able to speak a bit of Spanish and to be open for change and to see how things, you know, how things come along. Because and it's not as easy as the other ones.
Yeah. And also, you know, sometimes when we're talking the other day about the Camino Francés, we said in the Camino Francés, you can go from a five-star hotel to a Donativo albergue where you sleep on the floor. When you go to the Portuguese, there's not so many options. Some days you have to stay in a hotel because there's no albergue, and some days the only thing to be, it's an albergue. How's the situation in the Vía de la Plata? Can you find also Donativo albergues? Can you find incredible hotels, or is just whatever you can find? And survival mode.
Basically, whatever you can find in survival mode. The Donativo aspect, which I really enjoy on other Caminos, I can't really recall it being there on the Vía de la Plata. But you know, mind you, you're going through very poorer provinces of. Exactly what Joy says. There shouldn't be a problem, especially because there's not that many people. And it's known, so the villages know, you know, if they see someone walking, they automatically will know you're where you're coming from and where you're probably going based on the time of the day.
And also I think that one of the things that, you know, keeps this Camino great is like they are on the early stages of what probably was the Camino Francés at the beginning, you know, that people will put you in the school or put you in the church to sleep if there is no place, being so small and being so few pilgrims, as you say, just knock on the door of the bar or the church or the school and someone will find you a place to sleep. Do you have any of those days that you have to?
Yeah, there's places where you could stay. I mean, we stayed in, it was, you know, old gyms, school gyms or schools. I don't think we stayed in churches as there weren't that many. I mean, they were closed or there were just small chapels, but it's are fairly simple. But when you grow through cities like this, you know, this shot taken in Salamanca, you obviously can stay, you know, from a small albergue or to the Parador.
And how was it?
Sorry to interrupt you.
This is the same guy in
the purple. This is Mr. Gerald Kelly. And Mr. Gerald Kelly is the guy who knows everything and everyone on the.
Oh, yeah. I was reading today his website. He did a great guide about the Vía de la Plata, and he has a great group on Facebook. So we'll have to invite him next time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And how is the whole, you know, the distance, the walk in the Vía de la Plata? Because one of the things that we said in the Camino Francés, like one day you can walk 5Ks. You know, I know a guy that started in Shenzhen. Then he stopped in Orison, stopped in Roncesvalles, stopped, you know, the next village next to Roncesvalles. It took him about 7 or 8 days to arrive into Pamplona.
Which
can
you
do something like this in Vía de la Plata or not?
No, that's not possible. So stages like these could be from 30 to 40 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the shorter ones might be 25 to 30, but mostly it's 30 plus kilometer days towards the 40.
With nothing in between.
With nothing in between. Sometimes you'll have like a small village that might have just a bar, but really literally no place to stay. There's a lot of abandoned villages where it's just empty, where there's nothing else. So yeah, here we are walking with headlights. But this was...
Probably there's enough light over there.
Well, this was just, this was an albergue. This is before Castro. It switches to the Castro Jerez, I think. No?
No, Castro Jerez, no, that's on the Frances, my friend. That's Castro Orante. I don't know, but.
It's close.
So what time did you start walking when you were in the Vía de la Plata?
Well, I'm always kind of a late start. It's because I enjoy the ham and the wine, but I guess probably around 8:30.
Okay.
But these were days where we knew it was going to be a long day, and we would get up around 5 and start walking. But
and you did the Vía de la Plata during which time of the year?
So at the first bit, the first 100 kilometers I did in March 2020, but then COVID hit, and then I went back in September.
What was the temperature like when you wake up in the morning in March? So people have a ballpark of what it is to walk the Vía de la Plata. Oh, here, so somebody's saying the opposite. That
or 10. It depends if you hang out with Joy in the evening. So there's not only one.
So it's Joy's fault?
Not only Joy's fault, it's the combination. But yeah, so here we had to do a lot of road walking. So sometimes there's a bit of road, which some people might not enjoy. And mm-hmm. that's also nice to do it and to get rid of it, you know, early in the day.
And as you can see, you know, the crowd and the friendliness is probably the yeah. kind of people that have walked many caminos that have been yeah. there many times, no?
Yeah. Yeah, I forget this mister's name. He runs an albergue. Just before the Camino de Vía de la Plata splits off to the Camino San Andrés, which is the one we were talking about.
And here they were saying, you know, and this is hilarious because today I was reading an old blog post from the Trek, and a guy was saying the 10 reasons not to do the Camino from the Camino de Santiago. And I was like, what the heck? And one of the reasons, you know, is was someone was asking if there is bears in Spain. And one of the reasons, like the wildlife. I'm like, tell us what happened with the wolves.
So the wolf situation, first of all, I'm not a big fan of Spanish dogs or the way often dogs are treated in Spain. I mean, a lot of people have, you know, if you have farmland or they might have like, you know, like a car yard where you have but it's fenced off, but they have big dogs back there. And just every now and then they might be out running loose, which is also not so much fun. And also one of the reasons I like to hike with sticks, just to make sure. But the Camino, the Vía de la Plata walks through parts of Spain where there are wolves. You see their droppings on the trail.
Real wild. Life. Wolves. Probably the wildest Camino in Spain.
I think so, yeah. I mean, there might be, I think the Camino Primitivo from Oviedo to Santiago, you walk through some bits where there some bits, but... That's probably the wildest bit, yeah.
So any encounter with wolves or cows or anything?
No, the big encounters were the Mastiff dogs who protect the cows. And this is Jay here on the side, our Kiwi friend. We, one day we're walking through this field going up a hill, and there was a bunch of there was actually some bulls with all the cows as well, but there was also the Mastiff dogs, and they look, you know, pretty fierceful. And so we shat ourselves and tried to get the hell out of there as fast as we could. And the day after, actually, Joy walked up and was cuddling the dogs. Apparently the dogs got so bored of just being with the cows that they just want to go and play and hang out with people. So
And that's one thing that people need to be careful in the Vía de la Plata, as you were saying, you know, there is cows, but there's also plenty and plenty of bulls. And one of the things is very important in Spain, and anywhere you hike, when you close to a fence, remember to close it, because if not, the guy that is taking care of them is going to run for you and is going to look for you and it will find you. Remember that these bulls and these cows, you know, they are just there. If you don't do anything, 99.9 of the time, they don't do anything. And same with the dogs, you know, there's situations, and we know a lot of people talking Galicia that things had happened with dogs, but that's the 0.1 time. Usually they don't do anything if you make noise. And remember that, you know, in the old days, pilgrims walking with a stick, it wasn't for walking, it was from protecting from wild animals, mostly dogs and wolves that got wild. And one of the things we have to remember sometimes is not to play with the dogs or be really friendly. But that's because that's how they became wild. They get away. They don't know how to go back to their owner. They start, you know, looking for their own food. And sometimes that is a big issue. And we need to thank that to the association Alpaca that, you know, has been fighting to help pilgrims and help the dogs in the Camino.
It's good that you, it's very good that you mentioned that, because, you know, it's kind of our instinct to be nice with most of the animals, but, you know, if you start giving them food, they follow you, and before you know it, they're 5 kilometers from where they were.
And sometimes many pilgrims, you know, coming from abroad, as you were saying, you know, they don't know that those dogs, they think, oh, this is a stray dog and he doesn't have a chip or a collar or anything. I'm like, no, no, that's the dog, you know, that's wholesome dogs from here in Spain.
Yeah.
It's just that sometimes, you know, they know how to go back, but sometimes they don't. And I know pilgrims that have go, and if you're looking for a dog, if once you arrive to Santiago, you can connect to Alpaca, and they have plenty of Camino dogs that are loving to have a family. But tell us, what is this beautiful little place? Because one of the things also that in the Vía de la Plata, you go through some beautiful cities.
Yeah, so I actually forget the name of this. This is fairly early in the on the Vía de la Plata, but, you know, most of these towns all have, are all, you know, Pueblos Blancas. So all the houses are white, you know, for the sun, for especially to take care of the heat. And I just think it looks amazing going through these little villages where everything is white and you have all these old, you know, these rooftops. And I don't know, it's just something, it's the very romantic thing about it. It's totally, it's very typical Spain, yeah.
Here we see you again with the with your friend Karen. Also, what is kind of like that, you know, a lot of people, when we say it, for example, the other day when we talk about the Camino del Norte, a lot of people think the Camino del Norte is all, you know, single trail hiking, but there is a lot of road. How is the terrain on the Vía de la Plata?
So the terrain is mostly trail. I would probably guess to say about 85%. But when you leave towns like Cáceres, Salamanca, you know, there's road. You are within any cities, you have industrial areas that you have to go through. And I don't mind it. I just see it as part of a Camino. You know, if you're used to hiking a lot in nature and you're really coming out for a hike, like doing a GR, which is primarily just trail. I mean, it might be a bit of an adjustment, but again, if you leave early in the morning, you know, yeah, look at these views. I mean, this is amazing.
And you have also, what is this place? Places like this, no?
Yeah, this was probably the steepest climb of the entire Camino outside of Galicia. So Galicia always gets hilly. This was, I forget the national park's name, like also probably a week out from Santiago. And yeah, to the right, you see the cathedral in Sevilla.
That's another thing, you know, a lot of people, they know, that we were discussing the other day, how even if you, you know, you don't believe in, you know, or your beliefs are so different, how is really important, you know, to visit churches, because that's part also of the Camino and the culture. How is the Vía de la Plata in terms of, you know, cities to visit, cathedrals? Is there anything like the, you know, Burgos or León? Or is mostly just little villages with little things to visit and mostly just hang out with pilgrims?
Mostly little villages, but again, you have obviously Seville, which is, I would definitely take a few days once you arrive.
Oh, that's for sure.
To stay in Seville, which is amazing. There's Cáceres that you go through, Merida, Salamanca, Urense. I mean, there's some really good cities and very, very Spanish. So you won't see many tourists either.
Yeah. And also the change from the south all the way as you go up to the north, you're going to see probably more change than when you walk the Norte or the Camino Frances.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's summarize. When we talk about albergues, the quantity, what do you think compared to any other Caminos?
Yeah, sparse. I mean, you have the municipal albergues here and there, and then every now and then, obviously, of course, the private ones. You know, there might be one or two, especially in the little towns, or just one. The style, like you literally wrote, you know, it is what it is. You deal with it, and obviously the distance is long.
As you said, some days you have to do 30k, and you have to do 30k.
Yeah, there's no other way around.
And if you're lucky, you will find a place at the 30K. So that's one thing. Did you call in advance? Did you, like in those long distance days, will you try to make contact with anyone in the village to see if it's open or not, or just to make a reservation?
Yeah, I would call. And this was especially, there was a hospitalero who attended me, you know, who pointed this out to me. Normally on any other Camino, I would just wing it and see what happens. But on these Caminos, she said, it's not even for a reservation. It's because that someone will know
that
you left, or that,
excuse me, just for safety,
or that you're actually coming from, for safety reasons, that they know you're you know, arriving, because if they don't see you by 10 in the evening, they'll get in the truck and ride down
along the Camino. Things happen, yeah.
Anything can happen.
Yeah, I want to just remember everyone that if they have any questions for you or for me, that they can leave it in the chat. And let's keep on going. So the terrain, as you said.
Yes, the terrain. Other than, yeah, it's very relaxed. I mean, Galicia can always be, because it's Galicia is diferente. It's different. It can be either extremely beautiful and sunny, but if it rains, it can really rain.
It can be rainy.
Yeah.
The distance, we already talked about that, and the weather. I'm like, you did your first bar in March, and then you came back around, what, August, was it?
September.
So what time do you think is the best time to do the Via de la Plata?
I would probably do this in March again.
March again? Better than in fall?
Yeah, because everything will be green.
Will be green. No, fall probably is too dry to...
Everything is dry. Yeah, it has something. I mean, a lot of people don't like the desert. I like the desert because because of the nothingness. And it, you know, if you hike it in the fall, or like Dennis was planning on doing it in the summer, he's going to have that experience, which, you know, to each his own, it can be very nice. I mean, I was lucky to have seen both parts of it, but I guess the most important part is to think about when you would also arrive in Galicia.
Mm-hmm. And now what would you say is the pros? You know, when I think about the Via de la Plata, I think one of the biggest thing is very few pilgrims, no? That you're not going to find that big crowd or pilgrims walking, but that can also be something bad. It depends on what you're looking for, no?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Then also is the longest Camino in Spain, as you were pointing out, more than 1,000 kilometers. If you start from Seville, if you start farther down, it can be up to, I think it's 1,200. So that's amazing.
Yeah. I think you start in Cadiz, or even I've seen arrows in Tarifa.
Yeah, there is. There is also one that goes sides. There's this, I know that you can even walk from Gibraltar.
Oh, wow.
It's not a Camino de Santiago itself, but there is a Camino that gets into Gibraltar. Dennis is asking a very big, big question. How about wild camping out? And that's one of the things that I think no blog, no blogger has right in Spain, because here the regulations are kind of like tricky. Mm-hmm. So in Spain, we have two rules. One thing is camping, and one thing, you know, it's bivacking, and one thing is the overnight. So camping means that you put your tent during the day and you stay longer till the next day. That's considered camping. That's illegal. Also, in most of these Caminos, you go through private land. So it's not public, so it depends on the owner. And if the owner sees you or the Guardia Civil, they will kick you out. Then sleeping anywhere in Spain, if you go to a church, if you go to a graveyard, I've been sleeping almost in under a bridge, you can go overnight for the night. And if you put your tent when the sun is going down, out of a city, being out of the road, you know, out of the river, anything that place that feels, you know, safe, nobody can look at you, and you take your tent down in the morning, that's overnight, and that's legal almost everywhere in Spain, because it's not considered camping. But you have to put your tent when the sun is going down, and you have to take it off when the sun is coming up, and that's legal.
I didn't know that. That's a very good tip to know.
Yeah.
But to add, I mean, I guess it would be possible, because there's a lot of places where you could pitch it. But the one thing is to be careful is definitely bring a tarp to put on your tent.
A hard one. Yeah.
A very hard one, because the terrain can be very rough. It could be hard to find a place that could be comfortable. You know.
Yeah, and also I will say, you know, with wild animals, you have to be really picky where you put your tent at night, because as you say, the cows and the bulls can move around freely, and you know, even cars or people or hunters. I don't know, but probably if you have it and you go in a village and you ask them, they will leave you a place that you can put your tent without a problem.
Absolutely, I mean, in that, you know, if you were to be that adventurous, it would probably be easier to take a bivac. And
I would say go with one of those bivac, you know, last little covers that you just put with two sticks. And there's even ones that they're prepared with walking sticks that you can use.
Yeah.
And also in the Via de la Plata, it's not going to be that cold at night. So if you have a good sleeping bag and a good, you know, mattress,
I will be fine.
Unless it's rainy, you will probably can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here we have in Joy from Double Places. That's amazing. So what is the vibe of the Camino? You know, one of the things that I think in the Via del Plata, as you were saying, is the quiet, the relax.
Yeah. What I enjoyed about it is meeting, it's called a tarp. There you go. He needs a proper tent. All right. If you get the MSR Hubba Hubba, which is
that's a great, favorite. You know, I'm making a list. Also, one of the things that I want to do another day is a gear, but there's so much gear to review in the Camino that I'm going to have to invite like five of you guys to start reviewing different things, because also we have all different tastes as we grow older. We have all brands that we wish one day they sponsorize us and give us free shit, but we're not there yet. But so what is the vibe in the Camino in the Via de la Plata compared to other Caminos?
I find that, the people who hike it are conscious about a hike. They know what they're doing. So you're not going to get people, making rookie mistakes. People have their gear dialed down. People know what's going on. All right. Cheers for that, Dennis. So he's probably got the plastic tin. What are those guys called again? You know what I'm talking about. It's the ones that the guys in the PCT hike with.
Yeah, that's a little too extreme for the Camino. And I'm like, those things are expensive. Like, you can go for up to 200 euros. I'm like,
or even more.
I'm probably in the Via de la Plata with wind or anything, and I don't know. I don't know if I will get something. I will get something, one of those super light decathlon ones, and that will be amazing. If you need to throw them away, I get a new one. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, we have another pro here. Oh my gosh, we have all the pros of the Camino all over.
That wall tent, that's the one.
He knows his stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm not saying that someone else doesn't, but...
No, I mean, I've watched so many of those vlogs, what's his name? Darwin on the Trail. I'm sure you know him.
I've been backpacking with Decathlon on the Year 11 all my life, and they survive. And they're like 35, 40 euros. So
yeah, but you learn and you start to appreciate good stuff. And that's
what I know. You get older and you start liking the style and also the little stickers. Anyway, and if you have to say things that they're against going to Via de la Plata, what you would say?
I get a con. Some places, can be really shitty. I mean, you really have some towns that are run down, kind of, the vibe, depending on who's out and about, it can be very, you run into poor parts of Spain, if you're not used to dealing with that. I mean, sometimes the quality of food, could be bad, but not always. I mean, ask around. There was days where I would come through a town and I would make it an extra longer day just because the vibe, I didn't like the vibe and I was going to just wing it and try another place.
And you have to remember that some of these towns, as you were saying, there are places that they are a little lost in time and they have really no jobs or nothing. Like some of the areas that this Camino go through are really the poorest of Spain with no industry. And some of these people, it depends what you're looking for.
It is absolutely safe though. I mean, if everyone's listening and thinking, okay, this is, I'm going to walk through some type of ghetto. It's not like that. People are very friendly, very welcoming. And I've never heard of any problems.
No, you're safer in the Via de la Plata than you are any night out in Madrid or in Barcelona. So that's for sure. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, and now one of the biggest questions I think ever. I don't know if you have your favorite. I know I repeat myself with mine all the time. Muxía or Fisterra. Can you pronounce it that properly as a Galician or no yet?
It is Fisterra. I mean, Finisterre, I think, is the Castellano way, right?
Finisterre, yeah. Finisterrae, coming from the Latin, the last place on earth, Finisterrae.
Yeah.
Fisterra is in Galician. I like it better, but... Also, Muxía is one of the things that I used to say, Muxía, and all my Galician friends like, no, Muxía.
Muxía.
I think now I'm getting closer to the
Gallego.
I think what these two are, the mandatory ones for people that walk like a long distance Camino. And mostly if you walk the Francés from a long distance from Saint-Jean or even farther, getting from Santiago to Muxía or Fisterra, it's going to give you time to decompress, and probably... Dennis can tell us a little better because he has the coach at home. And you know, when you go through a journey like this, you need time to rethink, go back to everything that has gone through, to revive, think about everything before you go home. Yeah. Because a lot of people, they go to Santiago, they stay for a day, they take a flight, and they go home. And that's such an impact on you. And you have gone through so much in the Camino that you don't have time to really think about everything that happened to you. I don't know if your first Camino, did you walk to Muxía or Fisterra, or were you one of those that just went straight home?
We hung out, I think, 3 days in Santiago. Just
that's the way.
The party is just amazing.
It is amazing.
It's amazing. The food is great. You meet all the people you met along the way. You see them coming in. You know,
That's the best thing to do. Go to the Plaza Obradoiro every morning, have a good breakfast, and just wait for friends to come. Yeah. Take them to the albergue and then party all night.
Yeah, that's basically what we did until we realized, okay, this could go on for weeks, so we should probably get moving. But yeah, we ended up going to Fisterra. I mean, it's 100 kilometers. It can be done, and you're super fit by the time you get to Santiago. Yeah. Most people do it in 3 days. They are three long days. But yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, if you have the chance to kind of time it with the weather, that would be definitely worth it. If you have to, if it's raining for a day or two, maybe stick around Santiago before you're heading out.
I will say, you know, for me, I love to walk on the rain and walking to Muxía or Fisterra, because you go through all these, you know, forests, Galician forests, and getting to the coast and seeing the rain is amazing. I like it. But again, that's just me. For people that don't know, usually when you go from Santiago to Fisterra Muxía, there's one road coming out of Santiago, and then it goes into two. So the first day you walk with everybody that is going to Muxía and Fisterra, walks the same path. And then on the first day, it's kind of like when the splits. Yep. So you can go to Muxía, it's 2 days. So you can go to Fisterra 1 day, and then you can go from Fisterra to Muxía. That will be the Camino dos Faros. Yep. And as always, there's people that like most Muxía, there's people that like most Fisterra. If you have the time, do both. That's, you know, I don't know in your case, which one, have you been to both?
Absolutely. Yeah. I just need to make a small, tiny correction. I mean, the hike from Muxía to Fisterra, or other way around, there's actually two. There's one that's the official Camino one, which follows the yellow arrows.
The one along the coast.
And then there's the one along the coast. And the one along the coast is the Camino dos Faros.
That one is tricky.
That one is very tricky. Yeah, it's tricky. It's, I'd love to talk to you about that one. That was one of my favorite hikes. But even the hike, the day hike, which can be done in two, if you have extra time for people, I mean, you can do, there's a town in between Muxía and Fisterra called Liris, which is beautiful. Liris,
yeah.
And it's by the sea. The beach is amazing. The food is great. And it's, it's very, very Galician. And not many pilgrims end up staying there. So if you get a chance to do that, and it's gorgeous. I mean, you walk through the forest right along the coast. It's absolutely beautiful.
So, you know, one of the things that, you know, for me, when I was walking my first Camino, I asked everybody where to go first. And they always, you know, some friends were like, oh, go first to Muxía, then Fisterra. Oh, so go first to Fisterra, then Muxía. In my case, I decided Fisterra first, Muxía then. And when I arrived to Fisterra, this is what I see. You know, everybody was saying, oh, the sunset at the lighthouse. Where the heck is the sunset? This can happen to you. Yes. I couldn't see like 1 meter in front of me.
Yeah. I mean, you could also kind of look at it from a good shot. You could also look at it. You could also
much
look
younger.
I believe there's more transport back to Santiago from Fisterra than Muxía.
Yeah.
There's more options in Fisterra. I think it might be better to end, you know, go through Muxía first and then end in Fisterra, because Fisterra also has kind of the party vibe that Santiago has.
Yeah.
You know,
for me, in my case, you know, it was perfect to go first to Fisterra, because that was the, as you say, the party, you know, go with the familia, you go to the familia, you stay over there with everyone. Yeah. And that's something that you have to do. Yeah. Even if you don't like that kind of places, staying with the familia is like going to visit the cathedral, something that you have to do in your Camino. Yeah. The people over there is incredible. You're going to have incredible conversations. I remember talking with a big guy from a super, you know, company that was just staying there for a week, and it was hilarious. I'm like, I will remember that all my life. And then the following day, again, the sun comes out and it was beautiful. The beaches over there are incredible, super cold. The water is freezing, but beautiful, yeah, beautiful.
That beach, if you could go back to the one with the beach, that's the Fisterra beach.
Yeah, that's it. But there's a small little beaches here, if you go down, that there's no, but even though there's not that many people in the beach, most people stay in the village, and of course the famous boot
at the end,
at the cross. And here I have to do a little break, please. The whole thing about burning things and living things in over there,
I don't get it.
For me, it's just, you know, they're destroying. First of all, burning things is illegal. You know, Galicia has a huge problem with fires. Mm-hmm. And then living things, you know, one thing is you leave the picture of a friend and passed away or something, but people leaving their shoes, their, you know, their broken t-shirts, that's just garbage. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. There's some people that respect and they promote that, but here we will never do. And the fires, we are always against. If you want to learn, you know, one day I think we should do the real tradition of burning your clothes was at the top of the cathedral in Santiago. The rooftop, there's a place where pilgrims will burn their clothes, and it was because, you know, of the flies and all the
fleas.
Hygienic
reasons.
For me, if it's there is a Camino family and the Musea is a personal landing. I agree. I always say, you know, that Fisterra is where you finish your Camino with your body, mm-hmm. and then Musea is where you finish your Camino with your soul.
Well spoken.
So well spoken. Know, sometimes I'm wise. And I remember this, I don't know if you remember this little albergue in between. This is when you start walking from Fisterra to Musea.
Yes.
And it's amazing. Yeah. This couple over here, I don't remember the name, but...
Did he build, because he was building, this basically is a house. So when you, the Camino walks past this house and the guy was playing,
That's good. A great idea.
Yeah.
If you want to throw something, at least give it good use.
Yeah.
I don't know. This, you have to remember, this was in 2017. So this is 5 years ago.
Yeah. So the owner of this place, actually behind this house is where he's renovating his own house. But he bought this land and it was fixing up this house. And it's basically a house that has an open door. You could use the kitchen. You can use, you know, anything. There's the fridge is stocked. There's a donation box. People leave money behind, and it's basically a house for people to just hang out and rest.
Yeah.
I don't think you can actually sleep there.
I remember the day that I stayed there, there was a lot of construction, I remember, and they have like a menu, and it was super natural, you know, like a vegan menu, like with the fruit. Wow. I took a really nice, nice meal, and it was amazing. I stayed there for like an hour and a half just chatting and eating.
Yeah.
And it was just by myself. That was the best part of this.
Yeah, there's no one there.
And then you arrive to Musea. You know, one of the things that Musea has is the Virgen de la Barca. This is where supposedly the Virgin Mary appears to the fishermen over there. And one of the things that is crazy about this place is like there was a huge fire here because of storm. And the whole place got almost destroyed and they rebuilt it and are this. And do you know the story about this big stone that I'm standing on?
No.
No?
It's a great shot. It's actually, I've been to Musea a couple times, but I often just hang out a bit at the top and kind of where the people go. But tell me the story about this rock.
So in Musea, you have like three famous ones. You can see the one that you see at the top. And I don't know if you know the story of the one on the top. The one broken in two. So in Musea, there was one of the biggest wreckage of the story of Spain, the Prestige.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, you know, got covered in, you know, in petrol and all the stuff. And there was a huge, huge, like people were cleaning all the coast of Galicia for a year. That's, you know, the Parador de Galicia was a kind of like a gift from the government to the Galicians, but it was stopped for a while. And that big stone represents, you know, when the boat or the ship broke and it was right in front of the coast of Musea. And the other one, there's three famous rocks here and the Virgen de la Barca, or Virgen de la Barca.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying that they have, you know, miraculous properties. So this one, for example, the one that I'm staying, is good for your back. So you have to go, there's a small hole under and you have to go all the way climbing up, go down again, I think it's like seven times, and that will fix, you know, your back problems, your kidneys. There's another one that is for love, and there's another one that is standing and also has like different properties. But for me, this is one of the most beautiful places in the Camino, you know, the sunset here. And I'm going to put a small video if you let me, because the first time that I arrived here, I saw this place. And, you know, for me, I'm crazy about bagpipes. I don't know if you like the Galician music and the bagpipes.
Of course.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's for me, it reminds me of walking through, you know, arriving in Santiago where the bagpipe player is always playing.
So I was probably one of the luckiest guys in the world. And, you know, when I arrived to Muxia, I ran towards the sunset, and this is what I was there. And this was the end of my first Camino.
Beautiful ending.
That's incredible. They play for a long time until the sun sets. And, you know, when people say that the sunset in Finisterre is beautiful, I'm like, yes, it's incredible. But Muxia also, I think, you know, has the same.
She's a great town. I enjoy Muxia.
And as you were saying, you know, the walking through the Camino, you can see all this amazing views. And this is the Prestige, and this is the Virgen de la Barca, the church.
Yeah.
From another view. And albergues. Let's talk about albergues in the Muxia Fisterra. What do you think?
Plentiful. I mean, these two places are, you know, you have all types.
Yeah, and you can do 5 kilometers, 7, 10. There's many little villages. Maybe not with 10 albergues in everyone, but probably there is one in everyone. Yeah. And if you're looking for fancy places, probably on the small villages, there is nothing. But once you arrive to Fisterra Muxia, you have one of the top hotels that I truly believe in the Camino. That is the Parador in Muxia. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. That's the one that we have in the picture in the middle. And also in Finisterre, you have the O Semáforo de Fisterra. That's the hotel at the lighthouse. It only has like 5 rooms. It's not that expensive. So if you really go with your couple and, you know, with your wife, with your girlfriend, with your boyfriend, whatever, and that's kind of like the end, that's something that, you know, I would love to be one day and having a night there. That will be an incredible, and waking up to the sunset in the lighthouse must be incredible.
Yeah. Wow. The distance, like you said, everything can be split up. I mean, like we spoke about before, you know, by the time people get to Santiago, they've trained themselves.
Yeah, and also there's many options over there.
Yeah.
Terrain, there's some asphalt, but mostly it's just the typical Galician trail. Yeah.
Yep. Distance is broken up, and the weather, it can be tricky.
It's Galicia. Yeah, that's the thing. This year in Galicia has been a totally surreal year. It's been super sunny. The weather right now over there is incredible, but usually in Galicia it can rain all the time. It can be chilly, and it can happen. So if you go in April, it can be much, you know, if you don't like cold, wait probably till June, I guess.
Or gear up. I mean, again for another episode.
Okay, pros and cons of Fisterra Muxia. You go first.
The pros, so again, what's really nice is the fact that, I don't know, you might know, but I would probably guess about 80-90%, you know?
I would say probably 95% of the people
actually leave.
Or even more. I don't think I've ever seen more, you know, the albergues, they're super small. I don't think there's any albergue. I think the only place that I have a problem was in Fisterra, and also because a lot of people, they do the touristy and they took the bus.
And they take the bus,
But other than that, the albergues are small. They're like 20, 25 people at the most.
Yeah, max. And not full.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's definitely a pro. I mean, it could be a con if you're really into the party thing and you'd like to be around a lot.
As you were pointing out, you know, stay a couple of days in Santiago, have the party, receive all your Camino friends and stay with them, and then...
Yeah.
You go for the cleanse. The landscapes, I think, is beautiful. You know, Galicia, walking in Galicia, and there's a couple days that you go, you know, through asphalt, through the road, but mostly the trail is beautiful and super, super easy.
Yeah. I guess for me, the best thing is because it quiets down, especially because if you've done the party thing in Santiago or even just stayed for the one night, you know, most Caminos, besides the English and the Portuguese ones, all end up on sooner or later on the Camino Frances, even for the people doing the last 100 kilometers. So that's the bit of the Camino that gets really busy. So the last couple of days of your Camino, some people could be a bit stressed out because of how busy things can be, especially depending on when you're walking. Leaving Santiago, I mean, I loved that feeling. Once you walk down,
it's so weird.
Yeah, it's like it's quiet. There's no.
It's like when you leave the Cruz de Ferro and you know that you left your little people, your rock. Rock over there, but in Santiago you leave another one, and it's weird.
Yeah, it's definitely a mark. I mean, I've heard of people who come to Santiago and use it as a lunch spot and then continue walking. For them, the Camino isn't Santiago. It's the walk. It's the way of you know, I guess the way of the walk. And they just want to continue. So they breeze through, they have a cup of coffee by the cathedral and then continue.
And you know, we know because we've done it, and we know that the real Camino starts once you arrive to Santiago, and that's when you start realizing what walking, you know, and hiking and why we like this kind of like pilgrimage or hikes and why they're so special.
Yeah.
And And I think the only thing cons I will say right now is that Fisterra is super busy in the summer. So if you go to the lighthouse, you will see that 90% of the people over there is just tourists, that they go by bus or by car, and the town gets super overcrowded. Murcia is growing, but not so much. It's still like a little fisherman's place. So if you have to save for a place to have a really good meal or dinner, I will go for Murcia. Murcia, you have the Lonza de Álvaro. That's in one of the places that for the price that you will go to a good restaurant in Santiago, you can have a 5-star Michelin, you know, dinner or meal in Murcia.
And Fisterra, you have to send that link over. I definitely
want that one is that one. I have my connections. And in Fisterra, you have great restaurants, but I think it's more the touristic side.
Yeah, I mean, I like going to the. I mean, it is touristy, but if you go for the fish restaurants, because it's also a fisherman's town, you can get great seafood. I mean, it's amazing.
And one of the things that a lot of people don't know that you can do a tour on a boat and watch the sunset on a boat, and that's also incredible. And if you have to, I can send you the contact of a great guy that does the tours, and they do like a, you know, they give you Albariño. You have some tapas over there on the boat, and it's not that expensive, and also, you know, incredible to watch the sunset, and totally, you know, the views of the lighthouse is incredible.
Yeah, and you don't have to walk up the couple of k's to the lighthouse,
because also a lot of people, they think that Fisterra, you know, the village and the lighthouse, they are like one, and no, it's like two kilometers apart. So
And the one problem what I often see happening is that people go up when it's the sun is up and it's nice and warm, but they're there by the sunset. But when you got to go back down, which is, I think, 2.5 K, it's a good half hour, it could be cold.
Yeah. And people also usually they go over there with some drinks, and, you know, you go with the woo Camino and blah, blah, blah. You stay there sitting for like 3 hours, and then you're coming back and you're freezing by the time you're right back to Alberga. Yeah. And as you were pointing out, one of the important things, you know, from Fisterra to Santiago, there's buses. There's also, you can get a BlaBlaCar, but from Murcia, there's only one bus a day.
Yeah.
And it's much longer. It's like a couple hours, you know, from Murcia to Santiago. Yeah. So in terms of you need more transfer, as you were saying, you know, easier to finish in Fisterra than in Murcia. If you don't care, in Murcia, you just wait for the bus over there, and it's simple and easy.
Yeah, correct.
Anyway, nice. To anyone that has been listening, thank you so much. You know, as I always say, you know, we do this to just help you, to inspire some others, just to share knowledge. We can call it knowledge. It's just, I will say, just experience of the Camino. Yeah. And if you like it, you know, subscribe, send it to friends, and we will continue doing what we like the most, that is talk about the Camino.
Sounds good. Awesome.
So anyway,
I hope people enjoyed it.
And, I know. There's been quite a few people over here. And, you know, the whole idea of this is going to be a podcast. So tomorrow it will be on the podcast. So you can watch it on, you know, YouTube, on Spotify, on Google Podcasts, on iBooks, whatever your podcasting platform is. And, you know, it's one of the things that I think is getting more popular. And I think it's great also for walking or for staying at home, you know, and more every day getting to listen to other podcasters. And it's just great. It's such a great fun. At the end, it's what we do in the Camino. You know, you find someone, you chat for an hour, and then you jump to another one. And then at the end of the day, you just get 5 or 6 people together having a beer, and you just have a good chat and all several amazing Camino stories and memories. And
good stuff.
That's mostly it, no? So question, when is going to be and which one is going to be your great Camino, your next Camino?
Good question. I'm thinking of maybe hiking from Ribadeo to Santiago maybe this month. But one that is definitely fixed is going to be the Camino Mozarabe, but I'm going to split that up in 3 times a week. So it's going to be Almería, Granada, Granada, Córdoba, and then Córdoba, Mérida.
Yeah, you still have to come over here, and we need to do maybe, you know, the Pastanés or maybe some GR, and we still have to go for a ski. So
we gotta go ski as well. Let me know when it snows. I'll drive over.
I don't know. It's been super, like, we haven't seen any rain. You know, it's been like Galicia. There's no. I'm like, there's a snow right now, but
is it old snow? Because we, I need fresh. I like deep fresh snow.
Oh yeah, but we don't have that here in Spain. Come on, the real powder. Yeah, you're used to the good stuff. I'm like, go to the Galician. In Galicia, you know, there's one ski resort.
I know, but Asturias is close by.
That's also probably the same as where you're going to find in Galicia. I think we're going to have to go visit our friend Dennis if he would like to invite us and go to Sierra Nevada and maybe ski over there.
That's a good idea.
You know, sometimes I do have great ideas. Anyway, my friend, thank you so much.
I hope
we will invite you again for the gear review and buen camino, as we always say, Ultrella.
Thanks so much. Take care. Ciao.